Welcome to the 2018 National Environmental Scorecard Rollout Conference Call. My name is Richard, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Tiernan Sittenfeld. You may begin.
Thank you, Richard, and thanks to everyone for joining us on this very slow news morning. We know there's zero news happening, so thank you for joining us. I'm the Senior Vice President for Government Affairs at the League of Conservation Voters, and we are delighted to be releasing the 2018 National Environmental Scorecard, which is now live online in English and Spanish at scorecard.lcb.org. We've been publishing the scorecard every year since our founding in 1970. I'm going to provide some very quick highlights about the scorecard and then turn to our special guest, Senator Jackie Rosen from Nevada, who earned a very impressive 94% score last year in the House and has a 96% lifetime score. And then we'll turn to new members, Elaine Luria, who served in the Navy and then became a small business owner before coming to Congress to represent the 2nd District in Virginia, as well as Joe Neduce, who, before representing Colorado's 2nd District in Congress, co-founded a nonprofit focused on youth and climate change and served on the University of Colorado Board of Regents. So thanks to all of you for joining us, our special guests as well. We are thrilled that the 2018 National Environmental Scorecard is the last of an 8-year reign by the most anti-environmental U.S. House of Representatives in history. The tectonic shift to a pro-environment majority full of awesome new members like Representatives Neguse and Loria comes not a moment too soon, as the Trump administration has continued its unrelenting assault on our air, water, lands, and wildlife, all to benefit its corporate polluter allies. These attacks were all the more egregious in light of last year, which is now officially the 4th hottest year on record, and the climate change-fueled extreme weather from the deadliest wildfires in California's history to more intense hurricanes along the East Coast. It is clear that climate change is having devastating impacts on people across the country, particularly those from low-income and communities of color. The 35 House votes in the 2018 scorecard detail how the extreme leadership in the House of Representatives continue to serve as a rubber stamp on the Trump administration's attacks and once again push their own breathtakingly anti-environmental agenda. The good news is that these attacks were largely dead on arrival in the U.S. Senate, thanks to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and so many allies in the Senate who comprised the green firewall of defense. The Senate's 14 scored votes were instead predominantly efforts to confirm President Trump's radical nominees to the federal judiciary and the executive branch, which is one of the most damaging legacies of his presidency. So how did members of Congress do? 7 Republican senators received a score of 0% in 2018, meaning they voted against the environment and public health at every opportunity. In sharp contrast, 35 Democratic senators and 1 independent senator earned a perfect score of 100%. Senate Democrats and the independents who caucus with them averaged 95%, while Senate Republicans averaged just 8%. On the House side, 77 Republicans earned a 0%, and 29 Democrats earned a perfect score of 100%. The House Democratic Caucus averaged 90%, whereas the House Republican Caucus averaged just 8%. And now I'm delighted to turn it to Senator Rosen and then to Representatives Luria and Neguse, because we truly could not be more excited to work with the new pro-environment House majority and our allies in the Senate to hold the Trump administration accountable and to make real progress in the 116th Congress. After we hear from our special guests, LCV's Vice President for Government Affairs, Sarah Chifo, will then walk through a few more of the themes and particular votes from this year's scorecard. Senator Rosen, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for all the work you've been doing for so many years. And we know that the hard work continues, and it will unfortunately never be done. So we're glad you're out there. And I am so glad I have the chance to speak with you today. And I guess I congratulate you on your conservation efforts. And I just want to take this time to reaffirm my commitment to conservation and really especially protecting Nevada's lands and natural resources. And I am so proud to turn our shared passion for protecting the environment into to good, sustainable policy. As you know, conservation and defending the environment is something that matters deeply to Nevadans from all corners of our state. I've had the chance to speak with Nevadans in nearly every city and county, and everyone I speak with is adamant about the need to protect our public lands and protect our environment. And so, of course, I'm inviting fighting to invest in renewable energy research, highlight the national security threat of climate change, and, of course, in Nevada, I don't have to tell you about all the amazing places we have, but especially protecting Gold Butte and Basin and Range, which have been under attack for future generations. So far, I've been in the Senate just a short time, but I've worked to make progress and provide greater protections, not only for the state, but for the entire country's public lands. I recently helped introduce legislation to expand the Antiquities Act to defend public lands in Nevada and across the country. We passed the public lands package, which LCB supported, to protect nearly 1.5 million acres of wilderness and permanently reauthorize land and water conservation fund. And I don't want to steal anyone's thunder, but guess what happened last night? It passed the House. So a great big applause for that. You know, an example that perfectly illustrates our commitment to conservation is Nevada's delegation continues, how we continue to fight to stop the reactivation of Yucca Mountain as a nuclear waste repository. That's going to have unimaginable effects on our state and our environment. So I know that Nevadans sent me to the Senate because they knew they could count on me to fight for our communities, and I am really proud of my record as an advocate for Nevada's clean energy future, for our treasured public lands, and I am going to continue to be a champion for our conservation legacy. And I'm so proud to have such a great score on your scorecard. I like getting them. My parents, if they were still alive, they'd be very happy of me getting those straight A's there. And it's a great tool for not just Nevadans, but all Americans to see how their members of Congress are fighting for them on the issues they care about. And so I just want to thank you for your support, your guidance, the research, the advocacy you do, and helping us to understand these complex issues that not just face my state, that face our nation, and, of course, ultimately the planet and every single person on it. I am very grateful for your work, and I look forward to partnering with you for many years to come. Thanks.
Senator Rosen, thank you so much for your leadership, for your powerful words. The League of Conservation Voters is very proud of you and honored to work with you. And now I am also extremely excited to get to introduce Congresswoman Elaine Luria from Virginia's 2nd District, who I said is a Navy veteran and small business owner who is bringing her important expertise to Congress. Congresswoman Luria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and thanks for the opportunity to be part of this conversation. And I really enjoyed listening to Senator Rosen's remarks, and obviously look forward to following in her footsteps as a strong advocate, and hopefully I can do as well on my scorecard as she did to support the environment. And it's really a wonderful opportunity to and responsibility to represent coastal Virginia. So every inch of Virginia's coastline is within the 2nd District, you know, from the Maryland border to the North Carolina border. The entrance to the Chesapeake Bay, which is, you know, one of our great national treasures as far as, you know, its environmental impact, and really want to, you know, take the opportunity to be a strong advocate for the health of the Chesapeake Bay. And I'm working on bipartisan legislation right now to help preserve the Chesapeake Bay ecosystem. And very excited as well that, you know, this was something I promised to voters, and I did. My first piece of legislation that I co-sponsored coming into Congress was a bipartisan piece of legislation to stop offshore drilling off the coast of the Mid-Atlantic. And that's something that's very important to me, very important to our district for so many reasons. The obvious reasons for the environment, you know, the deleterious effects of an oil spill if we were to have something like the Deepwater Horizon off the East Coast would be terrible for our environment, for our aquaculture, for our fisheries, things that are, you know, so crucial to our economy in the region. And, you know, you did mention my military background. Offshore drilling is also not good for the Navy. It's hard to train properly off of our coast if we're dodging oil platforms. So there's so many reasons that offshore drilling is bad for Virginia, and I will, you know, continue to join my colleagues across the aisle for any legislation that helps to prevent that. And, you know, really looking forward to an opportunity to work on issues related to climate change. I'm part of the New Dems caucus, and I'm co-chairing a climate change task force within that group. And, you know, climate change manifests itself in many ways, and in our area specifically, sea level rise and recurrent flooding are impacting our ability to get around, impacting our economy, impacting the military's readiness. And so I really want to get at climate change issues, because I do believe that this is a crisis and there's a lot of opportunity for us to make tangible progress on things that are better for the environment, such as renewable energy. And offshore wind is another thing that's under development off the coast of Virginia. So very excited to try to push that forward, prove the tests that we're doing within Virginia in federal waters, and grow that, as another viable renewable energy source for our region. So those are some of my environmental priorities, and just really looking forward to the opportunity to work with League of Conservation Voters. Really enjoy hearing from your members and from your leadership about legislative priorities and how we can be the best advocates for the environment. So thank you for hosting this call today, and I will be working hard to have a really good, hopefully perfect score a year from now when we look at the scorecards.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Congresswoman Luria. And I would say we look forward to you having a great score, a perfect score, ideally. That, of course, it's worth noting, would not contrast more strongly with that of your predecessor, former Congressman Scott Taylor, whom you defeated, who had a 6% LCV lifetime score and just a 9% in 2018. So I think the transition from someone who voted against the environment literally at every opportunity to a champion like Congressman Luria really is evidence of the fact that elections have consequences, and we look forward to working with you to enact strong policies to protect the environment and especially to protect our coast. So thank you so much. And now I'm delighted to turn it to our final speaker, our final special guest, before we hear from Sarah Chifo, and that's Congressman Joe Neguse, who I mentioned is now the new representative for Colorado's 2nd District, which he is joining Congress after creating a nonprofit focused on youth and climate change and serving on the University of Colorado Board of Regents. And
good morning.
Hi, Congressman. And so thank you so much for joining us. We're thrilled that you're here. We are delighted that you're on the House Natural Resources Committee, on the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis, and I'd like to turn it to you to say a few words. Thank you.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, thank you, and apologies for the delay there. It's an exciting time for climate action in the United States Congress. The often repeated phrase of elections having consequences couldn't be more accurate with respect to this last election in the 2018 midterms, because the Democrats in the House, with our partners, of course, in the Senate, in the minority, perhaps, but nonetheless, are working very hard to really take decisive action to finally start moving the needle in this fight against what is an existential threat, in my view and in the view of so many others. I am very excited about the prospect of making some real progress over the course of the next 2 years. And I will say that I think we owe a debt of gratitude to the many organizations like the League of Conservation Voters who have been in the trenches doing this work for quite some time. And I think now we have the ability, particularly in the House, to finally start moving on pieces of legislation that they have been pushing for quite some time. At the end of the day, obviously, we find ourselves in a time of divided government. And so, the critics may say that some of what we're pursuing may not ultimately come to pass in this next 2 years. However, we know that policy is iterative, and that at the end of the day, doing the work now is going to be critically important in terms of setting the stage for the coming years as we try to do what we can to, as I mentioned, really combat this planetary crisis that we find ourselves engulfed in. We have a very short runway, as those on the call surely know, having read the IPCC report and a variety of other studies, that make clear that the time for us to really act is now, and that the cost of inaction is just too catastrophic for us to bear. And that certainly is the case for me personally. Running for Congress, I made clear that the climate change was going to be my top priority in terms of taking decisive action to combat it. And that comes from both, being a Coloradan, an environmentalist, someone who cares deeply about our way of life in Colorado, the public lands that we treasure and so forth. But also, during the campaign, my wife and I had our first child, a baby girl, our daughter, named Natalie. And so much of the work now that I'm doing in Congress with the help of my colleagues is really about making sure that the world she inherits is perhaps better than the world that we did. And I often think about what the planet will look like when she is, 10 years old, 15 years old, when she's 34 years old, as I am today. And as I said, if you read the IPCC report, it makes clear that the consequences of us not taking action now will be disastrous for that world that she will inherit. So lots to move on. I'm excited to take questions. Obviously, the speaker's designation and creation, re-empanelment, so to speak, of the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis is a signal to the country and indeed the world of just how serious we take the climate crisis and the gravity of this problem. And so I think you're going to find a committee that's very focused on the work ahead in terms of as I said, really taking this challenge head on. And, of course, you will see a variety of other committees of jurisdiction within the House, Natural Resources, which I serve on under Chairman Grijalva's leadership, and, of course, Energy Commerce, as well as other committees also, taking this challenge head on. You see that evidenced just by, virtue of the last 4 weeks, the multiple oversight hearings that have been held on the climate crisis. And so I appreciate the opportunity to address you all. And, again, I want to thank the League of Conservation Voters. They do such an incredible job each year providing the public with a very helpful resource in the form of their scorecard, which, gives the citizens across our country a great sense of where their particular member of Congress stands on the most defining issue of our time, in my view, which is protecting our planet. And so I have not yet received a score since I've only been in Congress for 8 weeks, I'm looking forward to working with the League of Conservation Voters and so many others to ensure that I get to brag about the score perhaps next year. So with that, happy to turn it back over and take any questions.
Congressman Neguse, thank you so much for your leadership. Congratulations on being a new parent. We are really excited to you having an excellent score for 2019 and thrilled to get to work with you on the Natural Resources Committee, the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis, and so much more. And if people would like to get in the queue to ask a question, you can press *1. While people are doing that, I'm going to turn it to LCV Vice President for Government Affairs, Sarah Chifo, to walk through a few votes from the course of the last year.
Great. Thank you. And thank you again to Senators Rosen, Congressman Luria, and Congressman Neguse. We are so grateful to have you fighting for our environment in Congress. Thank you all to the reporters also for joining us today. As Tiernan said, my name is Sarah Chifo, and I'm LCV's Vice President of Government Affairs. We're going to get a little bit into the weeds here, so bear with me. Before diving into some of the votes, let me first take a moment to review the methodology behind this publication. So the National Environmental Scorecard is based on a scale of 0 to 100, and a member's score is calculated by dividing the number of pro-environment votes cast by the total number of votes we scored. Please note that an absence counts as a negative. LCV works with experts from about 20 respected environmental and conservation organizations, including our state partners and a subset of our board, to select which votes are included each year. As Tiernan noted, the 2018 scorecard includes 14 votes in the United States Senate and 35 votes in the United States House of Representatives. In the Senate, we score a record-breaking 10 votes on nominations to executive branch positions and judicial appointments. This reflects the fact that one of the most damaging legacies of the Trump administration will be reshaping the federal judiciary with extreme and partisan candidates to fill these lifetime appointments on the bench. Now, the immense power the Supreme Court wields over the interpretation of our bedrock environmental laws, coupled with the credible allegations of sexual assault against him, led us to take the rare step of scoring 2 votes on Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation to the highest court in the land. We also include votes on Judge Oldham, who called the EPA, quote, illegitimate, and has taken strong stances against voting rights and immigrants. Judge Grant, who has an extensive anti-environmental record and has sought to weaken the Endangered Species Act. And Judge Nelson, who has argued against the EPA limiting carbon pollution. It is worth noting the scorecard does not include 2 radical judicial nominees, Thomas Farr and Ryan Bounds, because they never came to a final 4 vote because they didn't have the votes to pass. In 2018, thankfully, public pressure and strong oversight from environmental allies in Congress forced EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt and Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to step down. The 2018 scorecard includes the confirmation of coal lobbyist Andrew Wheeler to be EPA's deputy administrator, where his extreme policy decisions have been an absolute lockstep with his scandal-plagued predecessor. Wheeler has continued to prioritize corporate polluters over the agency's mission of protecting public health and the environment, and he simply has no business being confirmed to head the EPA. A few bright spots in 2018 were due to the deft leadership and negotiating skills of conservation allies in the Senate, especially Senators Carper, Stabenow, and Leader Schumer. These bright spots include a pro-conservation farm bill and defeating efforts to add provisions to the Coast Guard reauthorization bill that would expose our waterways to dangerous invasive species. Both of those votes are included in the 2018 scorecard. While it is not reflected in the votes scored, it is worth noting the Senate also worked across the aisle to make real progress on water infrastructure through the Water Resources Development Act and to avoid new anti-environmental riders and must-pass appropriation bills. Unfortunately, 2018 was also dominated by President Trump's zealous pursuit of an ineffective, environmentally damaging, and racist border wall, which ultimately led the year to conclude with the longest shutdown in our nation's history. The scorecard includes three votes related to funding for the border wall, one in the Senate and two in the House. The border wall divides and threatens communities along the southern border and has far-reaching negative impacts on our wildlife, our waterways, our lands, and circumvents dozens of cultural and environmental laws in its construction. The near-record inclusion of 35 votes in the United States House spans a wide range of issues, ignoring the cost of climate change, undermining methane pollution standards, gutting clean energy funding, eliminating the EPA's Environmental Justice Small Grants Program, undermining clean water protections in the Chesapeake Bay and the EPA's Clean Water Rule, attacks on the Land and Water Conservation Fund and National Monuments, several attacks on wildlife protections, numerous attacks on the National Environmental Policy Act, the only federal law that ensures the public has a say on projects proposed in their communities. Now, as Tiernan noted, we couldn't be more excited to work with the new pro-environment House majority and allies in the Senate to hold the Trump administration accountable and to make progress in the year ahead. Before we open for questions, I also want to note that we have a feature on our online scorecard called Recent Votes, where we post key environmental votes in real time. This resource is a great way to track the top votes that LCV is tracking during the year, and these are ones that we'll strongly consider scoring in the final scorecard at the end of the year. As Tiernan noted, the full scorecard is also available in online in Spanish and is updated currently. With that, let's open it up for any questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. We have a question online from Timothy Kama. Please go ahead.
Hi. Could you speak a little bit about the presidential candidates who were included in this? It seems like all or nearly all of them got to 100%. So, like, you know, what does that mean for differentiating them from one another in the primary?
Hi there. This is Tiernan. Thanks for the question and thanks for joining us. And you are correct that all of the declared candidates who are running for president in the Senate got 100%, so a perfect score. And I think that just that speaks to the fact that these candidates know that voters place the utmost priority on protecting our environment and on combating the climate crisis. And it's clear that if anyone is serious about running for president, she or he needs to really be an environmental champion.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Again, for any questions, that's star, then one. Our next question online comes from Tiffany Stecker. Excuse me. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm sorry, I just got the report was posted online. I wanted to see who the highest ranking Democrat was, the highest ranking Republican and the lowest ranking Democrat was on the scorecard.
Sure. Hi, Tiffany. Thanks for asking. This is Tiernan again. So Brian Fitzpatrick from Pennsylvania got a very impressive 83% and was by far the highest scoring Republican in either chamber. So we really appreciate his leadership. Not only was he someone who voted right, but he has really led on issues like protecting the Arctic Refuge and fighting climate change. He has a carbon fee bill. So that was a notable high score on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, there were a number of very low scores from people who missed votes, like Tim Walz, for example, who ran successfully to be the governor of Minnesota, had a low score because, as Sarah noted, missed votes are counted as an absence because we believe that's the most objective way of handling those missed votes. So, Colin Peterson was the next lowest Democrat with a 20%.
And that, I mean, Colin Peterson's been, has he been the lowest ranking Democrat for a while now? For several years in a row?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
And again, for any questions on the line, that's star then one on your touchtone phone. And I'm showing we have no questions in queue at this time.
Excellent. Thank you all so much for joining us. And I think people probably want to get back to the TV. So thanks again, and everybody have a great day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.